hard to find in the morning papers. It's hard to find in the magazines. It doesn't matter what show you tune in. It's hard to find on TV screen, but it's on talk radio. Truth is on talk radio. Turn it on, turn it up as loud as it'll go. Talk radio.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour of the National Intel Report, and I am sitting here with the Washington's farewell address. Have you read it? Tell you what I'm going to do. Seeing as how we're in such a constitutional crisis in this country right now, that we have people that think that it's okay for socialism slash fascism, that we find ourselves by way of the private monopoly. Oh, that's right. It's called the banking system, the Federal Reserve System. That they have butchered this country to the extent that they have. You know, I was talking with Mr. Pratt in last hour about this popinjay that he calls himself a congressman, a United States congressman from California, from Sherman, California, watching him on C-SPAN and talking about the need for this bailout package. And I am just sitting there in utter frustration at, I think it was about 8 o'clock this morning, feverishly dialing on the phone, just wanting to get my teeth in this guy's jugular vein. But unfortunately, the line was busy. But I did suggest to the C-SPAN staff that they call Mr. Ron Paul and do it post-haste. Don't delay. He will make time for your program in the morning on the Washington Journal. Get somebody in here that, A, understands what a constitution is, B, understands the dangers of the Federal Reserve, C, to bear witness and explain to people in terms that they will understand how exactly this private corporation is bailing other corporations out. I said, and if you do not do this, you are not serving the public interest that you proclaim to be doing through your programming. Oh, yes, we'll bring you the gavel to gavel on C-SPAN 1, the Congress, and we'll bring you gavel to gavel on the Senate, you know, on C-SPAN 2, and, you know, we'll throw stuff up there on C-SPAN 3. I said, look, I said in a rather calm voice that we are in a constitutional crisis in this country. It's not a monetary. That's the aftermath of what has already been done. And if you don't get Mr. Paul on your program, I am going to give out the email address to C-SPAN. And I said, and you're going to get thousands of emails. This kid, he says, well, we don't like being threatened. I said, this is not a threat. I said, this is of great national import. We have a constitutional crisis in this country, and we are going down the tubes. So this is a fervent prayer, not only a request, but a fervent prayer. Get somebody up there that knows what the hell he's talking about. Well, we'll see if they make that call. I get back from break. I'm going to read a little something to you. I think it wasn't our first king. It wasn't our first monarch. It wasn't our first dictator. It was, in fact, the farewell address of our first president of this great republic. Folks, you need to catch the fever, and I ain't talking about Major League Baseball here. I'm talking about the fever that we need to reignite in our hearts and our minds and our souls to get this country back. This nation stands, the New World Order loses. That's how important this is. We'll be right back.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful, attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
There we go.
You've heard the commercials on Life Change Tea, the all-natural, clean-your-system-and-lose-weight product. Well, maybe you don't believe. Maybe you doubt. For those who don't believe, we will give you a money-back guarantee. That's right, a 45-day money-back guarantee. Some restrictions apply. That's right, if you don't feel better and lose weight, you can get your money back. So what are you waiting for? Call now. Friendly operators are standing by. 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. Or you can order online. GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Or you can go to LifeChangeTea.com. Read up on us. You have nothing to lose but wait.
Here's Dr. John Mattson, a naturopathic doctor, and his views on Cartavite.
I would like to thank you, Don, for making my job so much easier, because your products just make it so simple, right? To fool around with a lot of exotic things that don't work, we can just put them on Cartavite and things start to work almost right away. I've had dozens of patients with heart problems who have corrected them. And what it's doing, there's so much garlic in there that has a yeast-killing effect. That yeast is a big problem in the gut, pushes the liver hard. It also has metal chelating effect. And most of the other herbs in there, I find that strengthen the arteries. They help to neutralize free radicals. Your remedy is as close to what we do in our program as you can get as far as one supplement goes. It's working on the gut. It's working on the liver. It's working on the arteries. What more can you ask for?
For more information or to order your Cartavite, call 1-877-928-8822. Cartavite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or tincture. Our website is heartdrop.com.
Get ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
Joe in Florida, quickly, my friend. Joe.
Hello, John.
Hi.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Yeah, I called my congressman today, and I came up with a great tactic. I called him up, and I said, well, if you bail out these swindlers on Wall Street, I'm not going to pay my mortgage anymore. I mean, I'm negative anyway on it. It's where my house is mortgaged for more than it's worth. And I don't like the banks. And I figure that it's a way of me, putting my problem onto somebody else's problem because they're not listening to me as an American citizen. So if they want to bail out the banks, I said, then when I get my, foreclosure notice, I will send it to my congressman and let him have the government pay. So in other words, I've heard people talk about a tax revolt. I think we should have a mortgage revolt because the banks, the IRS has guns and they have troops, but the banks can't do anything but send a sheriff to your house to make you leave.
Now, be quick about this, but what was the response back from your Congress critter?
I honestly, the secretary sounded flustered and I could hear her gulp when I said, and I will send the foreclosure notices to the congressman for my bailout.
Well, you know, what's wrong with applied, let me make the application for socialism right now.
I've always made it a point when I have a problem to make it somebody else's problem, because nobody cares when it's just your problem.
That's right.
But your politicians really care when it's a bank problem. So when I when I don't pay my mortgage anymore, I'm just going to say I'm not paying because you're using my money to bail out swindlers. Why can't you bail me out?
There you go,
and
Joe.
Believe me. Okay, thanks, John.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you, Jill. The Avalon Project at Yale Law School, believe it or not, www.yale.edu/lawweb/avalon/washing.htm. That's where I pulled this off of. Yale University, folks. 1796. Friends and citizens, the period for a new election of a citizen to administer the executive government of the United States being not far distant, and the time actually arrived when your thoughts must be employed in designating the person who is to be clothed with that important trust, it appears to me proper, especially as it may conduce to a more distinct expression of the public voice, that I should now apprise you of the resolution I have formed to decline being considered among the number of those out of whom a choice is to be made. I beg you, at the same time, to do me the justice to be assured that this resolution has not been taken without a strict regard to all the considerations appertaining to the relation which binds a dutiful citizen to his country, and that in withdrawing the tender of service, which silence in my situation might imply, I am influenced by no diminution of zeal for your future interest, no deficiency of grateful respect for your past kindness, but am supported by a full conviction that the step is compatible with both. The acceptance of and the continuance hitherto in the office to which your suffrages have twice called me have been a uniform sacrifice of inclination to the opinion of duty and to the deference for what appeared to be your desire. I constantly hope that it would have been much earlier in my power, consistently with motives which I was not at liberty to disregard, to return to that retirement for which I had been reluctantly drawn. The strength of my inclination to do this previous to the last election had even led to the preparation of address to declare to you, but mature reflection on the then perplexed and critical posture of our affairs with foreign nations, and the unanimous advice of persons entitled to my confidence, impelled me to abandon the idea. I rejoice that the state of your concerns, external as well as internal, no longer renders the pursuit of inclination incompatible with the settlement of duty or propriety, and I am persuaded, whatever partially may be retained for my services, that in the present circumstance of our country, you will not disapprove my determination to retire. The impressions with which I first undertook the arduous trust were explained on the proper occasion. In the discharge of this trust, I will only say that I have, with good intentions, contributed towards the organization and administration of the government, the best exertions of which very fallible judgment was capable, not unconscious in the outset of the inferiority of my qualifications, experience in my own eyes, perhaps still more in the eyes of others, has strengthened the motives to difference of myself. And every day the increasing weight of years admonishes me more and more that the shade of retirement is as necessary to me as it will be welcome. Satisfied that if any circumstances have given peculiar value to my services, they were temporary, I have the consolation to believe that, while choice and prudence invite me to quit the political scene, patriotism does not forbid it. In looking forward to the moment which is intended to terminate the career of my public life, my feelings do not permit me to suspend the deep acknowledgement of that debt of gratitude which I owe to my beloved country, for the many honors as conferred upon me, still more of that steadfast confidence with which it supported me, and for the opportunities I have thence enjoyed of manifesting my inviolable attachment by services faithful and persevering, though in usefulness unequal in my zeal. If benefits have resulted to our country from these services, let it always be remembered to your praise and as an instructive example in our annals, which under circumstances in which the passions agitated in every direction were liable to mislead amidst appearances sometimes dubious, vicissitudes of fortune often discouraging, in situations in which not infrequently one of success has countenanced the spirit of criticism. The continency of your support was the essential prop of the efforts, and a guarantee of the plans by which they were effected. Profoundly penetrated with this idea, I shall carry it with me to my grave as a strong incitement to unceasing vows that heaven may continue to you the choicest tokens of its benefits, that your union and brotherly affection may be perpetual, that the free constitution, which is in the hands, is the work of your hands, may be sacredly maintained, that its administration in every department may be stamped with wisdom and virtue, that, in fine, the happiness of the people of these states, under the auspices of liberty, may be made complete by so careful a preservation and so prudent a use of this blessing as will require them to the glory of recommending it to the applause, the affection, and adoption of every nation which is yet a stranger to it. Here perhaps I ought to stop, but a solicitude for your welfare which cannot end but with my life, and the apprehension of danger natural to that solitude urge me, on an occasion like the present, to offer to your solemn contemplation and to recommend to your frequent review some sentiments which are the result of much reflection, of no inconsiderable observation, and which appear to me all important to the permanency of your felicity as a people. These will be offered to you with the more freedom, as you can only see in them the disinterested warning of a parting friend, who can possibly have no personal motive to bias his counsel, nor can I forget, as an encouragement to it, your indulgent reception of my sentiments on a former and not dissimilar occasion. Interwoven, as is the love of liberty, with every ligament of your hearts, no recommendation of mine is necessary to fortify or confirm the attachment. The unity of government, which constitutes you one people, is also now dear to you. It is justly so, for it is the main pillar in the edifice of your real independence, the support of your tranquility at home, your peace abroad, of your safety, of your prosperity, of that very liberty which is so highly prized. But as it is easy to foresee that, from the different causes, from different quarters, much pains will be taken, many artifices employed to weaken in your minds the conviction of this truth, as this is the point in your political fortress against which the batteries of internal and external enemies will be most constantly and actively directed. It is of infinite moment that you should properly estimate the immense value of your national union to your collective and individual happiness, that you should cherish a cordial, habitual, and immovable attachment to it, accustoming yourselves to think and speak of it as a palladium of your political safety and prosperity, watching for its preservation with jealous anxiety, discountenancing whenever may suggest even a suspicion that it can in any event be abandoned, and indignantly frowning upon the first dawning of every attempt to alienate any portion of our country from the rest, or to enfeeble the sacred ties which now link together the various parts. For this you have every inducement of sympathy and interest. Citizens by birth or choice of a common country, that country has the right to concentrate your affections. The name of American, which belongs to you in your national capacity, must always exalt the just pride of patriotism more than any appellation derived from local discriminations. I will continue this and conclude it in this hour. I hope you're listening to Mr. Washington's address.
Each client
has a unique situation.
Each client is first and foremost
an individual.
Each client with Onesti Investment Advisors has a different set of goals,
time frames,
risk tolerance,
and needs.
But the philosophy at Onesti Investment Advisors always remains the same.
One,
the preservation of capital.
Two,
consistent profitability. And
three,
the pursuit of superior returns.
In that order.
CFP certificate, John Onesti has over 14 years in the financial services industry and understands the complexities of today's markets. At Onesti Investment Advisors, we have no conflicts of interest, so we look out for you, our client. The better you do,
the better we do.
To learn more about our products and services, call Onesti Investment Advisors, 505-296-2453. That's 505-296-2453. Visit us online at onestiadvisors.com or
click on our banner ad on the RBN website.
Onesti Investment Advisors, looking after your investments.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Question.
Is the world getting better or vastly worse?
A world economic collapse could come any day.
Question. Are you prepared or are you ignoring the signs?
Question.
Do you have 7 years of healthy food for your family? Answer. Go to survivalistseeds.com now. 12,000 seeds giving you 5,000 pounds of food for just 4 pennies a pound.
Without a long-term food solution, your choices are limited.
Visit survivalistseeds.com and check out our doomsday water filter system.
Without water, you die.
It's all online at survivalistseeds.com.
Are you prepared?
That's survivalistseeds.com. Go to survivalistseeds.com. Do it now or become
property of the New World Order.
Wasn't that the idea when we started out in school? That's what they said the Constitution was about.
With slight shades of difference, you have the same religion, manners, habits, and political principles. You have, in a common cause, fought and triumphed together. The independence and liberty you possess are the work of joint councils and joint efforts of common dangers, sufferings, and successes. But these considerations, however powerfully they address themselves to your sensibility, are greatly outweighed by those which apply more immediately to your interest. Here, every portion of our country finds the most commanding motives for carefully guarding and preserving the Union as a whole. The North, in its unrestrained intercourse with the South, protected by equal laws of common government, find in the productions of the latter great additional resources of maritime and commercial enterprise and precious materials of manufacturing industry. The South, in the same intercourse, benefiting by the agencies of the North, see its agricultural grow and its commerce expand. Turning partly into its own channels, the seamen of the North, it finds its particular navigation invigorated, and while it contributes in different ways to nourish and increase the general mass of the national navigation, looks forward to the protection of the maritime strength to which itself is unequally adapted. The East, in the like intercourse with the West, already finds, and in progressive improvement of interior communications by land and water, will be more and more find a valuable vent for the commodities which it brings from abroad, of manufacturers at home. The West derives from the East supplies requisite to its growth and comfort, and what is perhaps of still greater consequence, it must be of necessity owe the secure enjoyment of indispensable outlets for its own productions to the weight, influence, and the future maritime strength of the Atlantic side of the Union, directed by an indissoluble community of interest as one nation. Any other tenure by which the West can hold this essential advantage, whether derived from its own separate strength or from its apostate and unnatural connection with any foreign power, must be intrinsically precarious. While then every part of the country thus feels an immediate and particular interest in union, all parts combined cannot fail to find in the united mass of means and efforts greater strength, greater resource, proportionably greater security from external danger, a less frequent interruption of the peace by foreign nations, and, what is of inestimable value, they must derive from the Union an exemption from those broils of war between themselves which so frequently afflict neighboring countries not tied together by the same governments, which their own rival ships alone would be sufficient to produce, but which opposite foreign allegiances, alliances, attachments, and intrigues would stimulate and embitter. Hence, likewise, they will avoid the necessity of those overthrown military establishments which, under any other form of government, are inauspicious to liberty, and which are to be regarded as particularly hostile to republican liberty. In this sense, it is that your union ought to be considered as a major prop of your liberty, and that the love of one ought to endear to the preservation of the other. These considerations speak a pervasive language to every reflecting and virtuous mind, and exhibit the contuance of the Union as a primary object of patriotic desire. Is there a doubt whether a common government can embrace so large a sphere? Let's experience solve it. To listen to mere speculation in such case were criminal. We are authorized to hope that a proper organization of the whole with an auxiliary agency of governments for the respective subdivisions will avoid a happy issue to the experiment. It is well worth a fair and full experiment with such powerful and obvious motives to union affecting all parts of our country, while experience shall not have demonstrated its impracticability. There will always be reason to distrust the patriotism of those who in any quarter must endeavor to weaken its bands. In contemplating the causes which may disturb our union, it occurs as matter of serious concern that any ground should have been furnished for characterization by parties by geographical discriminations, northern and southern, Atlantic and western, whence designing may endeavor to excite a belief that there is a real difference of local interest and views. One of the expedients of party to acquire influence within particular districts is to misrepresent the opinions and aims of other districts. You cannot shield yourselves too much against the jealousies and heartburnings which spring from these misrepresentations. They tend to render alien to each other those who ought to be bound together by fraternal affection. The inhabitants of our western country have lately had a useful lesson on this head. They have seen, in the negotiation by the executive and in the unanimous ratification by the Senate of treaty with Spain, and in a universal satisfaction at that event throughout the United States, a decisive proof how unfounded were the suspicions propagated among them of a policy in general government in the Atlantic states unfriendly to their interest in regard to the Mississippi. They have been witnesses to the formation of two treaties, with Great Britain and that of Spain, which secured to them everything they could desire in respect to our foreign relations, toward confirming their prosperity. Will it not be their wisdom to rely for the preservation of these advantages on the union by which they were procured? Will they not henceforth be deaf to those advisors, in such they are, who would sever them from the brethren and connect them with aliens?
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Question: is the world getting better or vastly worse?
The world economic collapse could come any day.
Question: are you prepared or are you ignoring the signs? Question: do you have 7 years of healthy food for your family? Answer. Go to survivalistseeds.com now. 12,000 seeds giving you 5,000 pounds of food for just 4 pennies a pound.
Without a long-term food solution, your choices are limited.
Visit survivalistseeds.com and check out our doomsday water filter system.
Without water, you die.
It's all online at survivalistseeds.com.
Are you prepared?
That's survivalistseeds.com. Go to survivalistseeds.com. Do it now or become
property of the New World Order.
Are you concerned about cholesterol, blood pressure? Are you experiencing chest pain? Are you looking for a more natural method to help improve your health issues?
I had 2 mild heart attacks, and I had an 80 to 90% blockage in my artery. Don recommended I take this Cardivite. I haven't had any chest pain since I've been on it. It's brought my cholesterol down. My blood sugar was really fluctuating from 10 to 14 when I went on the Cardivite. You know, it really leveled it out. I'm really pleased. And I feel so good about it. I'll tell you, it's great for your circulation because I've noticed that I've had problems with my feet because of the diabetes, and they're getting better. They don't hurt as much. It's really great. I recommend this to anybody.
To learn more, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com. Call 1-877-928-8822.
Here's something. It doesn't matter if you're white, black, red, purple, thin, fat, or oblong. If you're eating food, you need to clean out the inside of your body. Why? Because undigested food and toxic chemicals build up in the digestive tract every day. If you think this can't hurt you, think again. It already has. Indigestion, bloating, gas, irregularity, and constipation are all connected to this toxic buildup. Here's what you can do about it. Take a supplement called Owl Cleanse. It's all natural, and it gently cleanses the entire digestive tract. All that leftover junk inside your body gets flushed away, and your bathroom habits suddenly become a whole lot smoother. Laugh all you want, but it's true. And it's why millions of people use Aloe Cleanse daily. They get more energy, they're healthier, and they look better. You'd be surprised. To try Aloe Cleanse risk-free, call 1-800-547-6603. That's 1-800-547-6603. Or log on to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click onto the Aloe Ease colon banner and learn more about this product.
You're tuned in to the National Intel Report, the Real Talk Radio Show.
To the efficacy and permanency of your union, a government for the whole is indispensable. No alliance, however strict, between the parts can be adequate substitute. They must inevitably experience the infractions and the interruptions which all alliances in all times have experienced. Sensible of this momentous truth, you have improved upon the first essay by the adoption of the Constitution of Government better calculated than your former for an intimate union and for the efficacious management of your common concerns. This government, the offspring of our own choice, uninfluenced and unawed, adopted upon full investigation and mature deliberation, completely free in its principles, in the distribution of its powers, uniting security with energy and containing within itself a provision for its own amendment, has just claimed to your confidence and to your support. Respect for its authority, compliance with its laws, acquiescence in its measures, are duties enjoined by the fundamental maxims of true liberty. The basis of our political system is the right of the people to make and to alter their constitutions of government, But the Constitution, which at any time exists, still changed by an explicit and authentic act of the whole people, is sacredly obligatory upon all. The very idea of the power and the right of the people to establish government presupposes the duty of every individual to obey the established government. All obstructions to the execution of the laws, all common combinations and associations, under whatever plausible character, with the real design to direct, control, counteract, or awe the regular deliberation and action of the constituted authorities, are destructive of the fundamental principle and of fatal tendency. They serve to organize faction, to give it an artificial and extraordinary force, to put in its place of the delegated will of the nation, the will of a party, often a small but artful and enterprising minority of the community, and according to the alternative triumphs of different parties, to make the public administration the mirror of ill-concerted and incongruous projects of faction, rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans digested by common counsels and modified by mutual interest. However, combinations or associations of the above description may now and then answer popular ends. They are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, unprincipled men will enable to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which they have lifted them to unjust dominion. Towards the preservation of our government and for the permanency of your present happy state, it is requisite not only that you steadily discountenance irregular oppositions to its acknowledged authority, but also that you resist with care the spirit of innovation upon its principles. However specious the pretext, one method of assault may be to the effect in forms of the Constitution, alterations which will impair the energy of the system and thus undermine what cannot be directly overthrown. In all the changes to which you may be invited, remember that time and habit are the least as necessary to fix the true character of governments as of other human institutions. That experience is the surest standard by which to test the real tendency of the existing constitution of a country. That facility in changes upon the credit of mere hypotheses and opinion, exposed to perpetual change from the endless variety of hypotheses and opinion, and remember especially that for the efficient management of your common interest in a country so extensive as ours, a government of as much vigor as consistent with a perfect security of liberty is indispensable. Liberty itself will find in such government, with powers properly distributed and adjusted, its surest guardian. It is, indeed, little else than a name. Where the government is too feeble to withstand the enterprises of faction, to confine each member of the society within the limits prescribed by the laws, and to maintain all in a secure and tranquil enjoyment of the rights of person and property. I have already intimated to you the danger of parties in a state, which particular reference to the founding of them on geographical discriminations. Let me now take a more comprehensive view and warn you in the most solemn manner against the baneful effects of the spirit of party generally. This spirit, unfortunately, is inseparable from our nature, having its roots in the strongest passions of human mind. It exists under different shapes in all governments, more or less stifled, controlled, or repressed. But in those of the popular form, it is seen in its greatest rankness and is truly their worst enemy. The alternative domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge, natural to party dissension, which is different ages and countries has perpetrated the most horrid enormities, is itself a frightful despotism. But this leads at length to a more formal and present despotism. The disorders and miseries which result gradually incline the minds of men to seek security and repose in the absolute power of an individual, and sooner or later the chief of some prevailing faction, more fortunate than his competitors, turns this disposition to the purposes of his own elevation on the ruins of public liberty. Without looking forward to this extremity of this kind, which nevertheless ought to be entirely out of sight, the common and continual mischiefs of the spirit of party are sufficient to make it the interest and duty of a wise people to discourage and restrain it. It serves always to distract the public councils and enfeeble the public administration. It agitates the community with ill-founded jealousies and false alarms, kindles the animosity of one part against another, foments occasionally riot and insurrection. It opens the door to foreign influence and corruption, which finds a facilitated access to the government itself through the channels of party passions. Then the policy and the will of one country are subjected to the policy and will of another. There is opinion that parties in free countries are useful checks upon the administration of government and serve to keep alive the spirit of liberty. This within certain limits is probably true, and in governments of monarchical caste, patriotism may look with indulgence, if not favor, upon the spirit of party. But in those of the popular character and governments purely elective, it is a spirit not encouraged. From their natural tendency, it is certain there will always be enough of that spirit for every salutary purpose. And there being consistent dangers of excess, the effort ought to be of force of public opinion to mitigate and assuage it. A fire not quenched, it demands uniform vigilance to prevent it bursting into flame, lest, instead of warming, it should consume. It is important, likewise, the habits of thinking in a free country should inspire caution in those entrusted with its administration to confine themselves within the respective constitutional spheres, avoiding in the exercise of the powers of one department to encroach upon another. The spirit of encroachment tends to consolidate the powers of all departments in one, and thus to create, whatever the form of government, a real despotism. A just estimate of that love of power and proneness to abuse it, which predominates in human heart, is sufficient to satisfy us both of truth of this position. The necessity of reciprocal checks in the exercise of political power by dividing and distributing it into different depositories, and constituting each the guardian of the public weal against invasions by the other, has been evinced by the experiments ancient and modern, some of them in the country under our own eyes. To preserve them must be as necessary as to institute them, if, in the opinion of the people, the distribution or modification of the constitutional powers be in any particular wrong, let it be corrected by an amendment in the way which the Constitution designates. But let there be no change by usurpation, for through this, in one instance, may be the instrument of good, it is customary weapon by which free governments are destroyed. The precedent must always greatly overbalance in permanent evil any partial or transient benefit which the use can at any time yield. Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would be the man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, these firmest props of the duties of men and citizens. The mere politician, equally with the pious man, ought to respect and cherish them. A volume could not trace all the connections with private and public felicity. Let it simply be asked, where is the security for property, for reputation, for life, if the sense of religious obligation desert the oaths which are the instruments of investigation in courts of justice? And let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. whatever may be conceded to the influence of refined education on minds in particular structure, reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious people. It is substantially true that virtue or morality is a necessity spring of popular government. The rule, indeed, extends with more or less force to every species of free government. Who that is sincere friend, it can look with indifference upon attempts to shake the foundations of a fabric? Promote, then, as an object of primary importance, institutions for the general diffusion of knowledge. In proportion as the structure of government gives force to public opinion, it is essential that public opinion should be enlightened. As a very important source of strength and security, cherish public credit. One method of preserving it is to use it as sparingly as possible, avoiding occasions of expense by cultivating peace, but remembering also that timely disbursements to prepare for danger frequently prevent much greater disbursements to repel it, avoiding likewise the accumulation of debt, not only by shunning occasions of expense, but by vigorous exertion in time of peace to discharge the debts which unavoidable wars may have occasioned, not ungenerously throwing upon posterity the burden which we ourselves ought to bear. The execution of these maxims belongs to your representatives, but it is necessary that public opinion should cooperate. To facilitate to them the performance of their duty, it is essential that you should practically bear in mind that towards the payment of debts, there must be revenue. That is, to have revenue, there must be taxes, that no taxes can be devised which are not more or less inconvenient and unpleasant, that the intrinsic embarrassment inseparable from the selection of the proper objects ought to be decisive motive for a candid construction of the conduct of government in making it, and for a spirit of acquiescence in the measures for obtaining revenue which the public may at time dictate. Observe good faith and justice toward all nations. Cultivate peace and harmony with all. Religion and morality enjoin this conduct. It can be that good policy does not equally enjoin it. It will be worthy of a free, enlightened, and at no distant period a great nation to give to mankind the magnanimous and too novel example of a people always guided by exalted justice and benevolence. Who can doubt that in the course of time and things, the fruits of such a plan would richly repay any temporary advantages which might be lost by a steady adherence to it? Can it be that providence that has not connected the permanent felicity of a nation with its virtue? The experiment at least is recommended by every sentiment which ennobles human nature. Alas, it is rendered impossible by its vices. In the execution of such a plan, nothing is more essential than the permanent, invertebrate antipathies, against particular nations and passionate attachment for others should be excluded, and that in place of them, just and amicable feelings toward all should be cultivated. The nation which indulges towards another habitual hatred or habitual fondness is in some degree a slave. It is a slave to animosity or to its affections, either of which is sufficient to lead it astray from its duty and interest. Antipathy is one nation against another, disposes each more readily to offer insult and injury, to lay hold of slight causes of umbrage, and to haughty and intractable, when accidental or trifling occasions of dispute occur. Hence frequent collisions, obstinate and bloody contests. The nation, prompted by ill will and resentment, sometimes impels to a war the government contrary to the best calculations of policy. The government sometimes participates in national propensity and adopts through passion what reason would reject. At other times it makes the animosity of a nation subservient to projects of hostility, instigated by pride, ambition, and other sinister and pernicious motives. The peace often, sometimes perhaps the liberty of nations has been the victim. So likewise, a passionate attachment of one nation for another produces a variety of evils. Sympathy for the favorite nation, facilitating the illusion of an imaginary common interest in cases where no real common interests exist, and infusing into one of the other betrays the former into a participation in the quarrels of war, of latter without adequate inducement or justification. It leads also to concessions to the favorite nation of privileges denied to others, which apt doubtly injure the nation making the concessions by unnecessarily parting with that, with what ought to have been retained, and by exiting jealously ill will and disposition to retaliate. In the parties from whom equal privileges are withheld, it gives to ambitious, corrupted, or deluded citizens felicity to betray and sacrifice the interest of their own country without odium, sometimes even the popularity, gilding with the appearance of a virtuous sense of obligation, a commendable difference for public opinion, or laudable zeal for public good, the base or foolish compliances of ambition, corruption, and infatuation. As avenues to foreign influence in innumerable ways, such attachments are particularly alarming to the truly enlightened and independent patriot. How many opportunities do they afford to tamper with domestic factions, to practice the arts of seduction, to mislead public opinion, to influence or awe the public councils? Such an attachment of a small or weak towards the great and powerful nation dooms the former to be a satellite of the latter. Against the insidious wiles of foreign influence, the jealousy of a free people ought to be constantly awake, since history and experience prove that foreign influence is one of the most baneful foes of republican government. But that jealousy, to be useful, must be impartial, else it become an instrument of the very influence to be avoided, instead of a defense against it. Excessive partiality for one foreign nation and excessive dislike of another cause those whom they actuate to see danger only from one side, and serve to veil and even second the arts of influence on the other. Real patriots who may resist the intrigues of a favorite are liable to become suspected and odious, while its tools and dupes usurp the applause and confidence of the people to surrender their interest. The great rule of conduct for us in regard to foreign nations is in extending our commercial relations to have with them a little political connection, as little as possible. So far as we have already formed engagements, let them be fulfilled with perfect good faith. Here let us stop. Europe has set a primary interest, which is to have none, or a very remote relation. Here she must be engaged in frequent controversies, the causes of which are essentially foreign to our concerns. Hence, therefore, it must be unwise in us to implicate ourselves by artificial ties in the ordinary vicissitudes of her politics, or the ordinary combinations and collusions of her friendships. Our detached and distant situation enables us to pursue a different course. If we remain one people under efficient government, the period is not far off when we may defy material injury from external annoyance, when we may take such an attitude as will cause the neutrality we may at the time resolve upon the scrupulously respected, when belligerent nations, under the impossibility of making acquisitions upon us, will not likely hazard the giving us provocation, when we may choose peace or war, as our interests, guided by justice, shall counsel. Why forgo the advantages of a so peculiar a situation? Why quit our own stand upon foreign ground? Why, by interweaving our destiny with that of any part of Europe, entangle our peace and prosperity in the toils of European ambition, rivalship, interest, humor, or caprice? It is our true policy to steer clear of permanent alliances with any portion of a foreign world, so far, I mean, as we are now at liberty to do it. For let me not be understood as capable of patronizing infidelity to existing engagements. I hold the maxim no less applicable to public than to private affairs, that honestly is always the best policy. I repeal it. Therefore, let those engagements be observed in their genuine sense. But in my opinion, it is unnecessary and would be unwise to extend them. Taking care always to keep ourselves by suitable establishment on a respectable defensive posture, we may safely trust to temporary alliances for extraordinary emergencies. Harmony, liberal intercourse with all nations are recommended by policy, humanity, and interest, but even our commercial policy should hold an equal and impartial hand, neither seeking nor granting exclusive favors or preferences, consulting the natural course of things, diffusing and diversifying by gentle means the streams of commerce, but forcing nothing, establishing with power so disposed in order to give trade a stable course, to define the rights of our merchants and to enable the government to support them. Conventional rules of intercourse, the best that present circumstances and mutual opinion will permit, but temporary and liable to be from time to time abandoned or varied as experience and circumstances shall dictate, constantly keeping in view that it is folly in one nation to look for disinterested favors from another, that it must pay with a portion of its independence for whatever it may accept under the character that by such acceptance it may place itself in the condition of having given equivalence for nominal favors and yet being reproached with ingratitude for not giving more. There can be no greater error than to expect and calculate upon real favors from nation to nation. It is an illusion which experience must cure, what just a pride ought to disregard. In offering to you, my countrymen, these counsels of old and affectionate friend, I dare not hope that they will make the strong and lasting impression I could wish, that they will control the unusual current of the passions or prevent the nation from running the course for which hitherto marked the destiny of nations. But if I may even flatter myself that they may be productive of some partial benefit, some occasional good, that they may now and then reoccur to moderate the fury of party spirit, to warn against the mischiefs of foreign intrigue, to guard against the impostures of pretended patriotism, this hope will be a full recompense for the solitude for your welfare by which they have been dictated. How far in the discharge of my official duties I've been guided by the principles which have been delineated, the public records and other evidences of my conduct must witness to you and to the world, to myself, the assurance of my own conscience is that I have at least believed myself to be guided by them. In relation to the still subsisting war in Europe, my proclamation of 22nd of April 1793 is the index of my plan, sanctioned by your approval voice and by that of your representatives in both houses of Congress. The spirit of that measure has continually governed me, uninfluenced by any attempts to deter or divert me from it. After deliberate examination, with the aid of the best lights I could obtain, I was well satisfied that our country, under all the circumstances of the case, had the right to take, and was bound in duty and interest to take, a neutral position. Having taken it, I've determined as far as should depend upon me to maintain it with modernization, perseverance, and firmness. I am not going to be able to finish the last two paragraphs of this. I should have not taken that call. My instincts told me such. But at any rate, that is the bulk, minus three paragraphs, of George Washington's farewell address. How much warning and love was written into that departure from the first president of the United States? And look, ladies and gentlemen, of what we are witnessing here today. We'll see you tomorrow.
Men, are you your